The team at Violent Gentlemen saw what I could do at their weekly skate and decided it was time to make our relationship official. Proud to announce the newest sponsor of the Eat 'Em Up podcast, Orange County's finest Violent Gentlemen Hockey Club. What's up, Ducks fans? Thanks for tuning in to another epi of Eat 'Em Up. And boy, do we have a show for you. Really look forward to getting into the nitty gritty of what's going on throughout the National Hockey League. We've got some trade talk, a lot of trade talk here. Roughly quarter of a way into the season here for a lot of the teams. And I just think it's a great time to just kind of go over trade chips. You heard Drury and the whole management for the New York Rangers come out. Hey, we got to shake things up after a blowout loss and Jim Montgomery's debut as head coach with the St. Louis Blues. So things are spicing up right now and teams are taking a look at their roster. Where are we at? Are we a 500 team? How are we looking to get over the hump? So it's so important, I think, this time to take a look at some notes and dive into that. But first, we have a message from a great fan, a Ducks fan. So let's take a listen, Steph.
Hey, Em, what's going on? I think the Ducks up to tonight, it looked like there was always a response whenever somebody got hit or injured, like last game when there were a couple fights. And it looked like, you know, the boys wanted to respond tonight to Leo going down, but in the third period, it ultimately didn't happen. Looked like momentum just shifted away. Ducks looked like hesitant a little bit. I was curious what the protocol is in your eyes. Like, I understand they're down a goal. They're not going to try and fight, but should there have been a response? Just curious what you have to say. Enjoying the show. Take it easy.
That's a great message. And it hits on a couple key points there, where they're at in the game, the overall response. What do I feel just how it all transpired? Look, I thought the response was fitting, given the circumstances. If you're looking to Radko Gudas and his response, look, the key here is accepting the instigator penalty or not. So when that hit happens, and maybe I'll rewind it to even a tad further here, just going based off the hit in itself, it was a tough one. I understand how the refs deem this just a minor. I know that there could be people out there that, hey, should have been a major. Couple things. It wasn't overly late. Leo moves the puck. The thing with Leo is it's just such an unorthodox area to get hit, right? So he's not really anticipating a hit right in front of the blue paint. Right. I think when you make that type of pass in other areas, you're more anticipating some kind of physical contact after it. Right. But was it a tad late? Yes. Was it too late? If we can all remember back to the hit, Rafi Torres took out Marian Hossa. I mean, that was a late hit. I mean, you can count 2-3 alligators before Rafi Torres throws that hit on Hossa there. And if you don't know the hit, this is a great example of just kind of comparing two different hits. So why don't you YouTube and give yourself some homework. YouTube the Hossa Torres hit. It's when Hossa was playing with the Blackhawks, and it was just flat out too late, pretty high. Overall, you can see why it was deemed a pretty hefty suspension. This wasn't necessarily the same situation. Once again, a tad late. Mixing in the tad lateness with the unorthodox area in which the hit was delivered, I think that is why you could probably make the argument that it could have been deemed a 5-minute major. Luckily, the contact was, I'm not going to say it was minimal, but it seemed like he could probably done even more damage just regarding the whole post situation. I mean, that is a scary area to get hit. And I understand why the refs deem that only a minor, but just leaving that door open for that argument of a 5-minute major. I think both calls you can have arguments for. I understand why the refs deem that. And they just, I think they looked at it as it, look, it wasn't too late of a hit. Did he let off? No. Should he have let off in that situation? Probably. But he probably could have done more damage just with that post being there. And maybe they came to the conclusion that when a player, any player, in this case it was Leo, makes that play, the fact that it wasn't too late, maybe they deemed he should have been just a tad more prepared to accept that contact as unorthodox as that situation just right in the net front is. So this is a situation, we don't see a hit being made in this area very often. I think that that's why there was that added longer discussion between the two refs at the penalty box. But I'm going to leave it at this. It could have gone either way. I understand why that the refs made that only minor call, and we'll leave it there. As far as going back to the original question and the response, I thought the response was fitting because of the instigator dynamic to this. Right, Radko grabs Cartier. And he pretty much lets him know, hey, we're going here with the wherewithal. If you drop him and Cartier decides not to drop him, well, you're the only one going to get the penalty, right? So they even this one up with taking those apiece and ends up being 5-on-5. The weird part as a hockey fan is you kind of sit back and with Leo going down as he did and him not returning to the game and kind of the factors surrounding that. You kind of sit back and just like, really, we're going to hit the play here and it's going to be 5-on-5 after all those occurrences. So that's kind of the interesting dynamic to this all. I thought the response was it was just fitting. You know, Radko doesn't want to take the instigator, especially in that time in particular. Of course, there's times where your top guy, the other opposing team, will take him down in one way or another, and those mitts immediately drop. I think this shows some intuitiveness from Radko, and he's thinking about not just backing his teammate up, but he's also thinking, okay, where does this leave us post-fight or post-situation, right? So I think it shows poise. I think it shows a veteran kind of mentality. And how about Trevor getting in on the action as far as helping Radko, helping that whole situation, him standing up for Leo as well. He's getting it done when it comes to 5-on-5. He looks great on the flank on the power play, as he always does. I mean, that's his bread and butter. But he's making so many plays. He's playing lights out. And then to see him be a great teammate within those confines, going back to the whole response aspect of it, I thought it was great. Great on Radko, great on Trevor. You don't want to just do anything reckless at the same time that puts your team in jeopardy with coming out with the 2 points. Now, this was a game-altering situation, no doubt about it. You know, I think maybe the argument can be made that was the energy and the momentum from the Ducks and the overall response through their play after it could have been better. Yeah, I thought they could have, you know, upped their game even more. At one point, they were in control of the hockey game, 2-1, right? And so I think that's the other argument to this. But I think the response, going back to the original question, it was justified. It was fitting. Can't make this argument that no one did anything about it. Radko essentially let Cartier know that, hey, that's not going to fly. You know, I want to go, yeah. And look, I think he took the steps necessary and are very fitting regarding the circumstance. And that was a great question. I mean, a lot to digest there. And there's everything happening in real time. It's the fastest sport in the world. And, you know, it was an unorthodox play. I'm sure a lot of guys watching that play just on the players bench in real time, they were probably taken aback of a hit being finished in that area. It's such an interesting, you're not in the corner, you're not on the forecheck. And it's just an unfortunate area to get hit. Haven't yet got an update on Leo. He seemed to Obviously, he was on the ice for quite some time. He managed to get up on his own and walk back to the dressing room. So those are all good signs. Scary at first, still scary. Never want to see anyone go down due to injury. And look, it's your top guy. You back him up. I thought the Anaheim Ducks, starting with Ratko, did a very fair job, we'll call it that, of backing up their teammate. But overall, good question. And this Ducks team, whether it's on the net front and not letting the opposing team get on the inside when the opposing team or whatever, Luke Gosch or Gibby frees the puck, they're doing a better job of getting on the inside, boxing out, and not letting anyone go through. They're sticking up for one another more. They're hungrier and scrappier. I want that aggression. I see that a lot after the whistle with a lot of these players, obviously in that territory, more specifically defensemen. But if you looked at the Burakovsky goal last game, you know, you want that aggressiveness, that intensity of backing each other up that we've seen with this Anaheim Ducks team after the whistle, and they're hungrier, and they're not taking S. I'm not going to say the word, but they're not just settling for being shoved around. No, they're planting their feet in the ice, and their skates in the ice, and they're protecting their goalie. They're protecting each other, which is great. And I, of course, you alluded to the previous game there where a couple scraps. Jansen Harkins getting in on the action. That was great. Ross Johnson, of course, doing what he does. The Anaheim Ducks haven't lost many fights, in my opinion, this season. I mean, Ross Johnson, he's a bad man. I tell you what, he can throw him with anyone and, you know, match that with his 5-on-5 play. It's great. It's great to have a guy like Ross Johnson who can get it done. He's up to the ante. And not that he was a poor performer 5-on-5 to begin with last season, but he's gotten better and better. There was a play in particular where it was a weak side rim going far side to near side. One hand, he grabs it, that puck off the wall with such confidence. And I'm like, whoa, that was a first line, second line type of play. It was just phenomenal. He made those plays last season and he continues to get better. But great response for the Ducks. You wish on some of those goals. Of course, this is the first one there with Wright and his deflection. You want to see more hunger boxing out. You want to see borderline cross checks in that intensity of just pushing that guy out, boxing him out. And Wright just got inside position. He didn't get inside position. He was still on the outside, but he was pushing back and giving himself enough space and real estate to get a great deflection there. And yeah, you want to see that intensity. You want to see that hunger and the arm motions of pushing those players out. Too many goals in tight where the opposing team's getting 3-4 hacks at it before it either finally gets in, or a guy like Ratko or Dumo, he's stopped a couple right at the goal line. They slap it to the corner. You want one save and get that thing to the corner or get the clear. And that's that. A couple news before we get into some trade chips here for each team besides the Anaheim Ducks. We'll leave us out of it because you know what? Right now, we're sitting pretty. We fall one game under 500. But look, the last two games, great hockey. This Ducks team was in command in both of the games. We could easily be on a five-game heater right now. And we're snagging points. And we know now, I think, heading into Seattle, what this Ducks team needs to bring in order to have success. But a couple of news and notes. Sidney Crosby recently scores his 600th career goal. Well, we don't need to really talk much further. We know what Sid has done for the game of hockey. It's just unbelievable. He continues to get it done. And really, there's no stop in sight. Lead of the team there in points. And he's a stud. And he continues to be a stud. It's how he goes about his business. And youth hockey players, whether you're in Southern California, Florida, Maine, or Washington, it doesn't matter. Look, anybody can learn not just one, but 1,000 things from how Sid handles his business. So I think everyone deserves to give a little hats off to Sid on what he continues to do game in, game out, and off the ice day in and day out. Connor McDavid, of course, recently scored his 1,000th point. He's getting points at an unbelievable rate. I mean, he goes, you know, even at the start of the season, we're like, what's going on? He's still not playing all that bad. And it goes to how much expectations are on his shoulders, how much pressure is on his shoulders. And for in that market to be able to come to the rink every day and just dominate, it's phenomenal. Ovi, not too long ago, went down with an injury. Of course, they're not going to rush him back. Everyone is anticipating that comeback just because he continues to do damage in the goal scoring department. And just a little sibling shout out. Of course, we got Ryan Stromer with our squad, the good guys. But how about Dylan? A little brotherly love there out in Capitals. It's so great to watch because you root for him because of that tie, right? I root for him because he's actually a former teammate. I had a cup of coffee with the Tucson Roadrunners, an unbelievable guy. I just showed up to the rink every day, just having the biggest smile on his face, developing. He tore that league up. He was ready to dominate right there. Coyotes had different plans, but he was ready to go from the get-go. Doesn't get a whole lot of opportunity there in Arizona to really take it and run with it. Had some great moments in Chicago, and he's just knocked it out of the park since his arrival. And, I mean, to be able to play, because now Dylan Strome is going to be on the highlight reels when the Hall of Fame tapes are rolling for Ovi. All those beautiful passes, that's so special, right? Because Dylan Strome gets to be a part of that in that legendary success. So it just couldn't have happened to a better guy, Dylan Strome. Everyone loves him. Everyone talks about him. He's just unbelievable. A lot like Ryan here. Just a great family through and through. If you love today's content, then I'd love for you to take a trip over to VGHC.com or stop by their Costa Mesa flagship store to see what the club is cooking up for hockey fans worldwide. Some trade chips. What's going on with the Boston Bruins? Well, I'll tell you, Charlie Coyle. What's going on with him? 5 points in 22 games played. He's got a ton of ice time. 17-27, I think, probably on a good year. He's getting up in the 19-20 just with the impact he's able to have. He's a gritty guy. He's got 36 hits on the season in 22 games. It just goes to show kind of everywhere. The production, the overall intensity. If you're a power forward like that, getting in the corners, he's a guy notorious of throwing those reverse contact and reverse hits. If you're only having 36 hits, it's just, look, he's got more. So, Boston, if things don't change here, there's a ton around the league that would love a guy like Charlie Coyle, especially in playoffs, because he brings that almost Andrei Kopitar style presence on the puck protection in the corners. That's his game. It translates to playoffs. Right now, in that deep division there with Boston, things don't turn around. They're not making playoffs, and you know, a lot of guys would you know, be happy to have a guy like Charlie Coyle. Peyton Krebs with the Buffalo Sabres. Look, better year, but it's been tough for him up until this point, right? His career high, 26 points 3 seasons ago, and he hasn't really lived up to that first-round pedigree that he came into the league with, but he's having a pretty productive season, 7 points in 20 games played. So this is kind of that situation. He scored against Anaheim. They're a couple games back, and look, our teams, I know they are, they're looking at players that, look, last 2-3 years he hasn't done, he's come alive. Is he going to be able to sustain this success moving forward? I know that they're having conversations just because Buffalo has been on a tear their last 10. I mean, really cooking, really playing really good hockey, and they're getting it done. Not to say that their goaltending's the best in the league, but hey, they're doing okay in that department. I mean, Dahlin and Power, we saw at Honda Center, just the skating ability of Dahlin. They have a lot of weapons. When Tage Thompson is healthy, to have a 6'6", 6'7" guy be able to go end to end, it is nuts. So Peyton Krebs, is Buffalo going to have this discussion? Hey, can he keep this production? He's only getting 12-18 of on ice per game, right? I'm tossing it out here because Buffalo, within their last 10, playing really good hockey. Now they're thinking playoffs when maybe even 2 weeks ago they weren't thinking that. And look, how are they going to get over the hump? Well, you got to think Peyton Krebs could be part of those discussions in the next couple of months here. Carolina Hurricanes, Sean Walker, he's a guy that's bounced around quite a bit here. He's with the Kings, a couple different organizations, Dallas, smooth skating defenseman. A lot of teams would like a Sean Walker. He doesn't have the production, and that's his game. I think teams everywhere he's been have been looking, where's that consistent production? His second year in the league, he had 24 points. Not too long after that with Philly, 22 points. So look, he's got a couple times 20 plus points. If you watch him skate, you're like, how the heck is he not a 40 point guy? And I think that's probably what a lot of people are thinking. It's a deep Carolina Hurricanes team. He doesn't get a whole lot of ice time, 16, 29. A lot of teams would like him. And if you think Carolina, they're trying to get over the hump, it's been tough to get past, second round, third round. And they just haven't been able to get over the hump despite really quality regular season success. Sean Walker, is he going to be a guy? Because, is he going to completely change the outcome night in and night out? Maybe not. And once again, I think people, judging by his skill set and his skating ability, are waiting for that. And, it could be a couple more teams before either he finds it or, people start to really think, okay, well, this is kind of his cap, maybe a 10-point guy from here on out. Ivan Provorov, I'm tossing this out from the Columbus Blue Jackets because you already hear it. So some of these are just shoo-ins because it's in the media and he's a guy 6 points in 20 games played. He's relied upon heavily. He's a smooth skating defenseman. He wasn't like a Werenski when Columbus was here, where literally every play, Werenski's just trying to go end to end, and it was spectacular and fun to watch. Super aggressive on the weak side in the offensive zone. So he's not going to give you that aggressiveness and activeness, but he's smooth skating. He's got a big kind of body presence. He's thick, and look, I think kind of like Sean Walker, the production. He's looked to be relied upon a lot for production, and 6 points, 20 games played despite 23-43. He's relied upon heavily, and he's been in those trade discussions. Once again, he's going to have a couple different teams. If it doesn't even work out in the next spot, Ivan Provorov, he's got the assets and the ceiling to really do big things. And he's been in Philly, of course, and look, he's at least in the media, there could be a new destination for Provorov. Looking just with Calgary, their top two players as far as scoring are both defensemen. And that's just where they're at. Anderson's first, 13 points. You got Mackenzie Weegar second, 12 points in 21 games. He was lights out to start the season. He's clearly trying to do his best. And Calgary's probably sitting back and just like, where do we go from here? Huberto, I mean, that continues to just haunt them, especially because Tkachuk just, in that trade, he comes out with a Stanley Cup. There's been rumors of Nazem Kadri to Toronto there too. I love Zary. I love how he plays, and he is going to be such a huge asset for years to come. You don't want to, that's from the last few years. Zary has emerged in their prospect pool to be just a lights out player. So you don't want to part with your future. Huberto, no one's going to take on that contract. So do you go just for a team that really needs a puck moving, point scoring defenseman? Just try to get more assets up front, just judging by your top couple scorers being defensemen. How about Philip Kurashev in Chicago? What's going on there? Over 50 points last season. He's got 4 points in 18 games. His total on ice, it's 15-55. I'm assuming that started out higher there at the beginning of the season. But look, a lights out, just going back, it was a brilliant 2-on-1. He passed it over to Bedard last season. It was a beautiful pass. Bedard roofs it against us. I mean, that was a 1-2 punch for Chicago. Don't know what happened. Don't know what happened in preseason there, but his production has drastically fallen. Chicago Blackhawks are probably taking a look at this situation. Hey, 50-plus points last season, was leading our team in a lot of offensive categories, and you just don't want to string a couple seasons of this production and management going shoulda, woulda, coulda, and received possible assets to help out our future. Yeah, 54 points, 75 games last season, almost 20 goals. Averaged 19.01 in ice time last season. So big dip in a lot of different areas. Logan O'Connor, he recently signed a six-year, $2.5 million per year with Avalanche. I love how he plays, but you got to think Colorado, they continue to need goaltending. Even in spurts of solid play with their goaltending, it's not a playoff goaltending-esque duo, especially what they have on paper from defense on up. I love how this Logan O'Connor plays. I know a lot of people, a lot of teams would love him at $2.5 million. That's a great contract for any team to get that consistency, hard-nosed game. He can put up points. He's going to give you 20 to 25, at least last three seasons he's been putting up those numbers. And yes, Colorado still looking for a attendee. We'll see how that plays out. And he's just a guy that, okay, they need attendee. Teams are going to be, well, maybe a first round pick, high end prospect, Logan O'Connor type of deal to add to maybe even the other team's playoff hopes. Moving on, Matt Dumba with the Dallas Stars. Hasn't been able to find it over the last few seasons. He was in Tampa there. Of course, last season, obviously, he played a little bit in Arizona as well. But his decline in production, you could see it. Had 50 points back in 2017, 2018. And it's, look, he's shifty. Could be overthinking it. There was a play back when we were in Dallas there, and Matt Duchene was middle support in the neutral zone, and he had his blade open, like, hit me for a solid 3-4 seconds. All Matt Dumbin had to do was hit him, move it north, get it up. He proceeded to just hold on to the puck, and he tried to go up the strong side boards with it, and it was a nothing burger. And I'm just like, that's just a play where it's a gimme. Duchene, your best player, is, or at least right now, is wide open. Just give him the puck. And it could be overthinking it in times, but the prior production there with the Wild has been trying to find his game over the last couple of years with production. Hasn't helped that he's been bouncing around team to team, trying to learn different systems and get organized in his own way. But look, a lot of teams, once again, would love a Dumba. Dallas is doing really good. Does Dallas feel that right now he's giving them what they need in order to really put them over the top in the playoffs? Because, you know, the Dallas Stars, this is their window, right? This is their window. They know it. And remains to be seen what happens there for the Detroit Red Wings. Look, goal scoring's been hard to come by for the Detroit Red Wings. Patty Kane, he's getting that age where, look, he just sells tickets, right? At this point, he sells tickets. Everyone wants to see Patty Kane do what he does night in and night out. Don't have it in front of me here, but last I checked, only 3 goals. And but once again, guy who sells tickets, he'll have that highlight reel play at least every other game, if not one per game. And Vladimir Tarasenko, now he's been doing better as of late, but definitely still a little bit of a slow start. And teams, I think, once again, Vladimir Tarasenko, he's got a cup now. He has that experience. I 100% know that there's teams throughout the league that would definitely pick him up. What price that they would give him at? I don't know. It's not going to be a first-round pick. Could be, of course, one for one, a couple second-rounders type of thing. But look, a lot of teams, I feel, still could use a guy like Vladimir Tarasenko, especially given his now playoff pedigree. Edmonton Oilers, it's always been about goaltending. We know how many assets they have from Bouchard there in the back end all the way up to Drysdale, you name it. They got a ton of talent. Warren Fogle, the fact that they let him go, that was a huge shock to me. I thought he, for it's a big pickup for the Los Angeles Kings, just a huge pickup and an underrated pickup for sure. But they still have obviously a ton of talent, a lot of secondary scoring as well. It continues to be Stuart Skinner and their lack of goaltending presence. Skinner with a .882 save percentage, 3.23. Come on, with those guys in front of you, it's just not good enough. A lot of pressure there in Edmonton. Everyone knows it. He knows it. And they've been going around the ringer. We're just back to Jack Campbell. Now him, they just haven't had good goaltending depth. And look, if they're going to make a trade, it's going to be a goaltender. And Stuart Skinner, you got to think. I think other teams, maybe not as competitive as Edmonton, would maybe be looking for a solid backup. Or if they don't even have it there and they're not competitive, maybe he could fill a role as a starter somewhere else. But the pressure's been on, and the delivery has been so. Florida Panthers coming off a cup win. Bobrovsky, phenomenal in that cup. I mean, they don't win a cup without Bob. He was big time, making big time stops up until game seven and eventually winning it. He's right at a .897. Not terrible, terrible. You're almost at 900. But you know, you look back to last playoffs, you know what he's done in the past. And excuse me, I'm looking at Spencer Knight's numbers here, but Bobrovsky's under 900 as well. And you would think just with that tandem, what Bobrovsky did last season, he's making upwards of 10 sheets a year, which is an astronomical amount for a netminder on any team. And this is why New York Rangers are hesitant when it comes to Shesterkin there, because it's just, you look at Bob, he got it done. Not everyone gets the opportunity at the price tag to make it happen. It takes a huge dent or makes a huge dent in your overall cap. And it's just it's a huge price to pay. But Spencer Knight, he's been there for a while. Hit it out of the park first year, .919 save percentage, 2.32. Only four games played, but 4-0. I mean, he came out of the gate flying, and his numbers have steadily been decreasing. .908 2021-22, .901 22-23, despite, how about that team? Stanley Cup, right? You got to take that with a grain of salt, and he's been slowly declining. He's .500 right now. You look at that Florida roster, they ain't moving anything, right? So some of these teams are just like, okay, what do they have? And we'll get to a couple teams where it's just, hey, they're not moving anything. And it happens to be just a prospect that's been lingering, not being able to get an opportunity. Spencer Knight, hey, maybe with a new team. And I'd be curious, and this is, I'd be curious for all the listeners tuning in here, Spencer Knight and Stuart Skinner. Would a Spencer Knight go up to Oilers and save him? I don't know. I don't know. Can he, with knowing he has just an open door to dominate, former first round pick, Spencer Knight is, and that's just, it's almost a toss up. It could really go either way. How about that? What if that came about? Two game seven teams, Stanley Cup final teams, Edmonton, Florida, make a transaction like that. This is why this is so fun. You get to kind of ponder and think if some of these situations were to come about. You're looking Los Angeles once again. Who are you going to move? You don't want to rush to the decision. Yeah, Deneau's got better, and you can look down the roster. One guy that caught my attention early on, he was playing spectacular, is Alex Turcotte. He was unbelievable. He was really good in the game. In fact, he scored in the game. If I'm not mistaken, I'm getting Laferriere and him, just them coming up together. I know Laferriere obviously got that turnover and put it short side low there. But regardless, through preseason, through the early regular season, first five games, six games, Alex Turcotte, I mean, he looked like a bona fide top two line guy. He was all over the ice in preseason. I'm like, this is for sure a new guy. Slowly been decreasing ice time. Now he's at 11:45. Still a power play guy, but his face-off percentage isn't great for being a true centerman, 38.4. 6 points in 16 games played. He started out way hotter, and he's been slowly declining. So with his injury history, if the Kings are going to make a move, and Kopitar still continues to get it done, leading their team in points, over a point per game, you got to think, this is still a window for them that, hey, maybe there's an outside chance just with their veteran president, some guys left over that have won cups already. Maybe if they had a piece, who knows? And you got to think at this point, Alex Turcotte could be part of those trade discussions. Minnesota Wild's another team where you're looking down the roster. It's like they're not moving anyone. A guy I like is that Kuznetsov. He's a speedy little guy that, he's all over the ice, and he's only getting 11:26 of ice time. It's just such a deep team. They play so fast. He actually fits in well. But once again, you look down up and down that roster, they're going to try to go for it just because of the rumors of Kaprizov and Chicago. Where could he end up next? Are they going to foot the bill? Does he even want to be there? So they're like, you know what? When's the next time we're going to have a generational talent like Kaprizov, right? We got to take advantage of this situation. And hey, Kuznetsov, I know a lot of teams would be asking to toss a guy like that in a trade. Josh Anderson, he's finally picked it up. 10 points. He's at half a point a game. He's getting some solid ice time, 14 minutes for a second, third line guy. He's hitting lots. He's averaging over two hits a game. Got to figure a couple of those, five, six hit games. I love how he plays. A lot of people, fans or I know management throughout the league, love how Josh Anderson plays. A playoff team would love to have him. He's a poor man's Tom Wilson. He really is. And he can get it done. He has a nose for the net. He's scored lots in the past. The reason I'm bringing him up for Montreal is I know a lot of teams would like them. Montreal continues to be not in a position where they would like to be in or foresaw themselves. And you got Slav, who he's playing so-so, only got a goal on the year. Josh Anderson, he's finally picked it up after a slow year last year. And do you want to foot that bill on what he's getting paid, knowing that a lot of teams would take him and that contract on now that he's playing better and add their playoff rosters? Don't know. Remains to be seen, but it's certainly something given from his lack of production and overall consistent play that Josh Anderson there in Montreal could be a guy that they're looking to move on as his positive playing increases. Simon Nemitz, like, this is a guy that he just needs a new situation. Jersey, they're lights out. They're a good team. Love their offense. A lot of high rolls, constantly moving their feet. A lot like how Minnesota plays their 5-on-5 end zone, and a lot how New York Rangers with those high switches plays with Trocheck and Bredman, so on and so forth. I really like their style of offense. Being a second overall player, this is an offensive-minded defenseman. How about this? 19 points in 60 games. How is a guy like that in the minors? You know, he plays his first season, 22-23, with Utica. That's a full year in Utica. He comes up 23-24. He spends a little time in Utica. But 19 points in 60 games, and now he finds himself back in Utica in the minors. And a lot of teams, I'm sure, would love to have his services. And former second overall pick, it's a situation where they're not going to trade anything else. They finally got their goaltender in Markstrom, and a lot of teams could use a young stud on the back end. And even looking when his the news of him getting sent back down to Utica came about, a lot of fans were surprised, and they were cheering on his play when he was up. So he's got to be thinking, oh boy, here we go again. And I know a lot of other teams would be welcome him with open arms. What's going on in Nashville? Oh boy, it just doesn't get any better. They make these minor trades, Fabro a little bit ago, They just had a pulled off another, you know, minor trade here. Talks of Ryan O'Reilly to Toronto. That's come about. Look, last year, 69 points. He can still get it done. He's got Stanley Cup, obviously, experience in winning a cup. And Toronto would love to have a guy like that. So the two guys I've heard to Toronto, Kadri and O'Reilly, given he's played there before and would love to have him back. Who knows? Who knows? You got a sense that Trotz there in Nashville, he's going to continue to mix things up until things get better, because he certainly didn't anticipate the slow start for them. You look at the Islanders, they wouldn't move a guy like Barzal, right? They wouldn't move Palmieri, who's just come on. I mean, they're not going to get rid of their core scoring guys, but a guy that's been there for a long time, this Oliver Wahlstrom, high pick. He's a 11th overall pick by the Islanders in 2018. He just hasn't found it. He went into the National Hockey League, big time scorer before college, big time scorer in college. And look, he just hasn't been able to get it done. You thought there for a little bit. He was half a point a game, 2022-23. And you thought he was going to start coming along there despite the injuries. And he hasn't found it. And just wondering if another team feels that if they were to join them, that they would get any kind of boost. How about this is the big one. This is the biggest one of all. The blue shirts there. The New York Rangers. It's Chris Kreider and Jacob Trouba are the two that have been the talk of the town as far as trades are concerned. Grass isn't always greener on the other side. And why would you get rid of Kreider, who's got 9 goals in 19 games played? That would be crazy to me. You know he's going to get it done in playoffs. But why at 9 goals, 19 games? I think every other team in the National Hockey League is not getting rid of a guy with 9 goals in 19 games, despite him not having an assist. It's just, it'd be crazy to me. So if you can get either a solid 1-for-1 with Jacob Trouba, and I don't know with the shakeup what they're really looking for, but hey, Trouba, not Kreider. You know, Kreider's veteran. He's been deep in the playoffs. He continues to get it done. I mean, his consistency is phenomenal. Why would you, and this is, I don't even know if the Rangers are even thinking this. I'm basing this off of the two guys that I've read about in the media as possible trade chips. I get why Kreider is. You know, he's been there for a while, and maybe they just feel that, hey, with his services, we haven't really been able to get over the hump. But at 9 goals, that's taken away a lot of production. Don't understand why you would do that. I think that would be a huge negative. And look, Jacob Trouba, he's been their captain for a while now. If anything, go a good 1-for-1 for him. Maybe one. You got to give up a first round pick too to just to land a generational either vet or, you know, whatever the case may be. Maybe you got to toss 2 first rounders in there. But nonetheless, I would go Trouba. They got some other guys in the back end. Lindgren has really stepped up. I feel like, and just look, don't just blow it up with a Kreider trade. That wouldn't make sense to me. If you're Ottawa, doing better than anticipated. I don't think anyone really had Ottawa exploding. I think people had Ottawa exploding last year. Didn't happen. Coaching change. Coach Green has done a great job in there. Shane Pinto is a guy that, oh boy, it's been 8 games. His last 8 games, 0 points. He's a point guy. He's a skill guy. No excuses, because he's got 1704 of total average on ice per game, and that's a lot. But 8 games, 0 points. Look, they're playoffs in the hunt. Everyone across the league is in the hunt. It is so even right now. This is the one year where this is probably the most even I've seen in a really long time. So it's been competitive. Another team that could turn around with maybe even one trade, Philadelphia. Morgan Frost has been kind of highlighted as a guy that could potentially be moved for them. Look, this is a guy, 46 points back in 2022-23. So averaging over half a point a game. And for reasons not quite sure, a lot of teams would love a guy like that services. He's still so young. And why his name has been more in the media, maybe some other guys in that team, not quite sure. So we'll have to continue to monitor that situation. Kevin Hayes for Pittsburgh. You look at Pittsburgh, no one's going to try to acquire Carlson unless massive salary is retained. He's actually, you know, production-wise not bad, but it hasn't worked out for them. He hasn't propelled that team to new heights since he's arrived there. Kevin Hayes, you know what? His production, 4 points in 15 games played so far, so it's so-so, but his face-off numbers, 59.4%. Just a lot of teams need good face-off centermen that can consistently win draw. I mean, if you can get a guy that's at the, around the 60% mark, I mean, that's still really good. He's only getting 935 of ice time per game. That's not a whole lot. And so kind of writing's on the wall per se with Kevin Hayes there. It remains to be seen what Dubas and the crew do with that one. Shane Wright seems to just do good against our Ducks, doesn't he? I don't know if he does how impactful he is game in, game out and on other nights, but last year, he just comes alive. I mean, he was a stud last year against our Ducks, really doing some damage last night, picking up a couple points, only 4 points in 19 games played. But, you know, he's a guy that maybe changed the scenery. He's done the minors experience. He has grown his game in there. He's a great skater. He's a powerful skater. He gets to the gritty areas. Is it a locker room kind of thing? I don't know. We all remember the draft, the stare that he did to the teams there after not going first or second, so on and so forth. He dropped a little bit. But hey, who knows? But take it easy on our Ducks, Ryder. It's just it's unacceptable. Klim Kostin with San Jose. This is a guy in preseason. Did some damage. He comes over. Last season from the Detroit Red Wings after having a slow start there, 10 points in 19 games played. I'm like, okay, he looks solid here in preseason. This guy's going to do some damage. He's a heavy boy, very strong, gets on the forecheck, has a finishing ability, and donuts through 12 games. Only 846 of on ice. So San Jose, look, their young guys are rolling. There's talks of Will Smith potentially going down to the U.S. junior team. So that remains to be seen. But Klim Kostin, he's got the playoff-type game. Why is he struggling as of late? Not sure, but it's interesting given his recent success, even dating back to last year with the San Jose Sharks. For the St. Louis Blues, kind of a shocker. You look down that list. No, they don't have on paper, obviously, the best team in the National Hockey League, but they have pieces. One guy that's been in trade talks, Jordan Binnington. I was saying, well, would they just kind of really go for something big and maybe look at moving on from possible Falk? He's averaging, you know, upwards of 23, 24 minutes a night. So he's a big part of that D, but his production numbers slow. He's I think he's a minus seven here through the year. And he's been a couple of years back, probably the Stanley Cup year I was reading earlier, is plus 40. So he can get into that high range of great defensive play, great offensive play. St. Louis just not finding it. This last game, big time 5-2 win against the Blue Shirts there, sparking all this trade talk from the Rangers. So, hey, maybe with Montgomery, they can get some consistent success. A lot of teams, you got to think, a lot of teams are struggling to find goaltending. So would you want to part with a guy that's got it done, got a Stanley Cup, struggled as of late, but you had a couple more pieces, you got a new coach. Hey, he definitely would be a guy to lean on once that the pieces are in place from a team standpoint. Cam Atkinson, the Tampa Bay Lightning. Once again, Tampa doing well right now. They're not going to move on to any pieces. 35-year-old in Cam Atkinson. He's been in the league a lot of years. And look, he's a guy in which his last big year, 2021-22, 50 points. Got 28 last season. Not bad. He's just getting that age. But with 2 points, 12 games, with the team that Tampa has, a lot of teams. I know a lot of teams would still use a Cam Atkinson, grow the youth movement in a lot of these programs. So just once again, some of these are just toss-ups. You look down the roster, they ain't going anywhere with a lot of these guys, but Cam is certainly one they'll have to think of, especially his playing time come playoffs. Nicholas Robertson, it's in his bloodline. It's in his DNA with his brother Jason there in Dallas. He's picking up his game, Jason. Slower start. How about 14 goals and 56 games played with Nicholas Robertson? I was looking down the list. Okay, who would Toronto? Okay, you're talking about maybe O'Reilly bringing in a Kadri. You know, teams are going to be asking about Robertson. Just judging based off of him in Toronto's history, there's always been trade talk and there's always been how much potential he has. And with only one goal in 18 games played, the Toronto Maple Leafs are rolling right now. Absolutely rolling. And he just doesn't seem to be a major piece in that success right now. He's only getting 12 minutes a game, which isn't too low. I mean, that's actually very good if, third, fourth line guy, and he'll take it. But, within those consistent minutes, 18 games played, the prior trade talk history, one goal. It's just, I think a guy like that could use a new scenery there. Michael Garconi with the Utah Hockey Club. He's a guy that even last year, 29 points, 21 goals. 21 goals. He's got the big donut in the goal scoring category this year. He's not even injured. Only played 11 games. Only averaging 10.32 of ice. Look, a lot of teams would love to have him. He's the one guy that has been in the trade talk for Utah. So that's just kind of a shoo-in. But everyone's scratching their head. 21 goals last year. What is going on within his own game? Vancouver Canucks, once again, a team that, I tell you what, they're not going to just blow it up. They're constantly, and this is our window, that they'll constantly be in the playoffs. But Hoglander, I mean, he's a guy that's great on the forecheck. He's got 5 points in 19 games, not getting a whole lot of ice. And if Toronto or if Vancouver were indeed to make a trade, you know, a lot of teams would be checking in on Hoglander and trying to add to their forecheck game. Vegas, they're not going to do anything. You look down their roster, even Hill, whatever. They just, from goaltender on out, they're too good. They've had too many guys that have recently got it done for them. Why change that mentality? But a guy that's just been kind of lingering, Brendan Brisson, dad's a big-time agent, of course. And it hasn't worked out. Part of the reason, let's see, plus-minus in his NHL career so far through the 22 games played, he's a -8. That has probably something to do with it. He has yet to register a point this season. And look, he doesn't have a ton of experience, but being a first-round pick, you got to think that, once again, if Vegas is going to do anything, don't even need to do anything, but maybe just locking up something more in the future that makes more sense for them. Got to think Brendan Brisson could be part of those discussions. Moving on, Winnipeg, what are they going to do? They're on fire, right? Logan Stanley is currently injured right now. The Logan Stanley project has been long. Where they feel he is, maybe they didn't draft. I mean, he's a first-round pick, mostly probably due to his size, his range, that Myers in Vancouver type of game, which they lost, right? Myers was in Winnipeg, so it kind of makes sense that they wanted to bring in another guy, or at least draft a guy like that, that they can mold into that Myers type of player. And look, he's been in and out of the lineups at times. He's been injured, as he currently is. Not get a total whole lot of ice time, 15, 13. You know, he's not being relied upon heavily. Would other teams find a benefit, especially in a youth movement? Chicago Blackhawks, for a team, they love their big D. Would they move on from a Korchinski, given the fact that he was sent down? Are they happy with a Korchinski? I don't know. But once again, this is where these organizations could be looking at their prospect pool, what they have on paper, and just trying to make a one-for-one type of situation happen. Look, Thompson and net for the Washington Capitals. He's their guy. Do you move Charlie Lindgren? I know it's a great 1-2 punch. A lot of these are just, hey, trade tips. I'm going through each and every team. Some team, you just look at, you know, Washington doesn't have to make a move. I get it, because they don't. But if they were to, probably knowing they weren't anticipating being this good, given the fact that other teams are going to be trying to get over the hump, a situation a lot like Pittsburgh, right? Where, look, this is Sidney Crosby's last window. Washington is much more competitive than Pittsburgh, but you just don't want to sell the farm. If you're Pittsburgh and Crosby's situation, you want to give him some assets to work out as he really finishes up his career. But Washington and Ovi, different situation. Not a whole lot of tradable assets because everyone's really working. And Dubois, hey, just this was the place. I think he's got another probably gear in him, but it's working out for them. And he's a guy in playoffs. He's spotty in games. You watch his full 60 minutes game, he'll be the best player on the ice one shift and do some phenomenal, make phenomenal plays with the puck. And then he goes stale. And if whether that would translate to playoffs, well, we saw it, of course, last season, right? No help there with the Kings, but maybe this is a new, more accountability there with Ovi in that Washington locker room, but he's getting it done. Let's look to see if that translates into playoff action, but just going down the list, no, Washington's not going to trade anyone. Both goalies are doing good. There's a lot of teams in need of a goalie. A lot of teams would love to have a guy like Charlie Lindgren, him being their number two right now. With the success they've had, he's a guy that probably the one guy that I could see other teams calling on and them looking in return to get something that puts them over the hump. Lot to digest there. I had a lot to get off my chest. This trade talks from a lot of teams throughout the National Hockey League has been fun to tune into. I love the fact that our Ducks are so competitive game in, game out. Look, folks, recently they took down a very good Dallas Stars team. The last five games, consistent hockey, yeah, killer instincts. You know, you were in sole possession to come out the 2 points last two games. It didn't happen, but you're still in the hunt. As we mentioned and reflected on that great voice message that we got, the guys are sticking up for one another. And the team identity, I'm going to end this epi on this. The team identity is very clear, very crisp right now for the Anaheim Ducks. They're sticking up for each other after the whistle. But it just seems like they go into games with more of a solidified game plan. Their template seems a whole lot simpler. That is hit the red, put it in a corner, send two guys, be aggressive, and hopefully come out the win with some of those 50-50 puck battles. But there's less trying to beat two, three guys, move the puck up and throughout the neutral zone. Their set breakouts have been really crisp. That's what I've loved. I loved the unforcefulness of a guy like Zelly or a guy like Brian Dumoulin. Take that puck back, not rush their set breakout. They are thinking less because their game plan has a lot less to it. I still think you'd like to see more offensive zone plays when they do start to unsimplify, when they do start to get a little bit more methodical. I mentioned it earlier, you watch a team like New York, those high switches. You watch a team like New Jersey, the high switches, Utah Hockey Club, those high rolls. You know, you like to see more of a consistent game plan after the simplicity of those high to low shots get through and you start getting those puck back. And now you push the other team back and you got them back on their heels. You want to see a little bit more playmaking, but the best thing about this Ducks team, less thinking going on, less is more. They're playing a 200-foot game. They're grittier. They're meanier. They are meanier. They are meaner. And they are winning more puck battles. And I just think a lot of the pressures of individual areas of the ice where maybe they're lacking, I think they've stopped worrying about that. They're playing quicker. The exits are a lot quicker. It's one pass out or strong offside or strong off the glass and out. And they're stretching out a lot more because a lot of these other teams are doing it. You saw Seattle. I mean, they just took that puck and tried to go for the long bomb. Dallas was doing it. Sagan gets a breakaway out of it. They're starting to play that way. Simplified, out of the D zone. Simplified, just kicking that puck out. Middle driving. A lot of good tip plays on those middle drives. Less is more for this Ducks team. They know it. They've been better because of that mentality. And come on, boys, continue to do it because it's been fun to watch the competitiveness of a lot of these games, a lot of wins here recently. It's been so fun. Orange Country, we want more of it. Thanks for tuning in to another epi of Eat 'Em Up.
This is an Anaheim Ducks original production on DuckStream.